scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, happy Friday. It is Friday, December 6th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. And as we do on Fridays, it's time for the Eric Francis Hour. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry cares for their horses, employs Albertans, and contributes to the economy. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus, please play responsibly. Eric Francis joins us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Hello, EF. Happy Friday, pal.
Happy Friday, my friend. Listen, you and your little round table buddies there, suggesting that all quarter century project for the Calgary Flames was, you're struggling with it. What a load of garbage. That is the easiest list I think I've ever put together
really?
In my life. Like,
you know, I think I just care more than you, you know, like I think that I put more effort into things like this and overthink.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, I guess maybe I mailed it in, but listen, it's an interesting discussion for sure. And I know you guys will have it. We'll probably have it. But just if anyone's at home thinking, what would the all quarter century team look like for the Calgary Flames? 6 forwards, 4 defensemen, 2 goalies. It's really quite simple.
Goalies really easy. Is. Goalies are easy. That one's non-debatable. My point was so good that Eric Francis he has nothing left to say. Something happened with his connection, didn't it? We're going to need to reconnect with Eric Francis. Great start to the Eric Francis Hour here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It is brought to you by our friends at the Horses Alberta. Are you back now, Francis? We lost you for a sec.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry about that. Sorry, new technology.
Did you mute yourself?
It's probably a good idea if I did that more often in life, but no, I did not. Okay. It was a technical error. Anyway, we'll get into that discussion about the All-Century team some other day.
We should, because it would be a lot of fun, and I would really like to kick that around with you and why. I'm agonizing only with the 6th forward and the 4th defenseman is what I am having a little bit of issue
that's
with.
They're only little issues. Just mail it in. Like, I know, get it in there. It's really quite simple. It's funny, I asked my 5th defenseman if he was okay with me being left off, and he was fine with it. And here's where I got a problem. The 5th defenseman, they gave him a vote in this little project. I think that's a conflict of interest.
Is the 5th defenseman your panel, one of your panelists on Sportsnet?
I'm not revealing any of my sources, but Sarchi was,
You know,
he wasn't sure where to go with his fifth
defenseman. Don't know if I should go Nick Grossman or if I should go Doug Murray. Like, there's a lot of difficult choices to make. Yeah. Pat Seeloff. Anywho. The Flames are, look, this is not a news flash. This is not breaking news. But this team is having an immense difficulty scoring right now. That is now 24 straight games after Thursday's game against St. Louis, 24 consecutive where they haven't scored more than 3. It is hard to wrap your head around going that long without scoring more than 3 goals in a game. Had they found a way, and we'll get to the overtime goal this hour, but if that overtime goal doesn't count, maybe they finally break their streak, but it doesn't. It counts, and they end up losing 4-3. Francis, nobody on this team is on pace for over 50 points as it stands right now on December 6th. I think it is fair to say that if you would have gone back to like September and early October editions of the Eric Francis Hour, we would have been talking about, hey, this team might have difficulty scoring this year. But did we expect it to be as pronounced as it's been? Or I guess what I would ask is, what is your surprise level as to how much difficulty the Flames have had scoring goals?
Yeah, I think it's a big surprise. I didn't think, look, we didn't think they'd be amongst the top 10 scorers in the league, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, but before they went on this streak, they actually did put together quite a lot of goals in their first handful of games.
Yeah, it was their first three games where they were scoring pretty. Like they have the game against Edmonton in Edmonton. They beat Philly. They had the crazy win in Vancouver. All those were four or more.
Yeah. So anyway, it is surprising. There are a lot of different people to point your finger at. It en masse, they've just not even come close to producing the offense that you need. And just as an FYI, because it's going to be a topic as we get closer and closer to it, 24 games is only three off the NHL record for the last quarter century. 27 is the record in the last 25 years. Right now, I think the Flames have now the third longest streak of this ilk. It's crazy. I didn't see this coming. And, you know, I think it kind of starts with the top. I mean, we could argue who is the top guy, who is the number one guy offensively, but I think it's Nazem Kadri, and I think that it starts with him. We haven't seen what we saw from him last year, especially at the end of the year when he was going gangbusters. So he knows he's not producing anywhere near the way he does. We could go through the list and single person is guilty of it. But I look at the list now and I also go, did we really think that these guys were going to get it done offensively? I'm not sure we thought we did. I think everyone was counting on Connor Zeri for taking a big step offensively. And while I think his game has actually taken a big step this year, I really do. I do think he's better than he was last year, you know, significantly, but it just hasn't resulted in the points that I think people thought would translate. Would you agree with that?
I agree. And I think that's fair, which is not to say it's a bad thing, because I think if you take the steps that I agree he's taken in his overall game, I do think eventually the scoring is going to catch up. In fact, I do think overall the Flames have more in them, period, because I look at some of the other things. I mean, they're generating scoring chances at a pretty decent rate compared to the rest of the league. They're in the top half of that on 5-on-5. Their shooting percentage is abnormally low just based on league averages. I do think that'll improve. So I do think we will see a slight uptick. But they're 26th overall in goals per game, Eric. They're 30th in 5-on-5 scoring. I don't know if are they going to get themselves into the top half of the league offensively? Maybe not. But I do think there is more there to give them a little bit more support to what has been strong goaltending and to what has been strong team defense. And so if those two things can stay standards of their game, and we do see even one or two of the individuals you just mentioned, whether it's Zeri or Huberdeau or Kadri or whoever it might be, if we see even a slight uptick in terms of their finishing or pucks going in for them when they're on the ice, then I think that maybe we're talking a little bit less about this and we're harping on it a little bit less. Because right now, it's maybe the number one thing everybody's talking about on a nightly basis. Like, their inability to score four goals has cost them a lot of wins. I mean, it cost them a point against St. Louis. They scored that fourth goal, not just in overtime, but the amount of opportunity they had to score a fourth goal and take their first lead in regulation. They can't get it. They don't get the win, whether you like the overtime goal or not, which we'll get to.
Yeah, it's one thing that I think, I'm not trying to make excuses for the guys, but this is an organization, this is a coach who's decided that, you know, with the assembled talent that they have in the organization and in collaboration with the general manager and everybody, we have to play defense first hockey to have a chance to win hockey games. They also think that that's the best way to win in the playoffs, and I don't disagree. But I think that when your mindset revolves largely around defense first, you're going to take a hit offensively. Like, I don't think anybody thought this team would come in and their leading scorer would be anything more than a point per game. Like, Kadri was pretty close last year. I think he had 75 points, you know, in 80-plus games. But, you know, this is one of those teams, like, whenever you used to look at the leading scorers, remember when we used to have newspapers and you'd get that Tuesday fresh sheet of stats every Tuesday? It was the greatest thing.
Was that the day that you got the big extended stats page?
Yeah, okay. It was the best. And like, two full pages in the sun of all the stats around the league, and you...
I think maybe until we get the technical issues resolved, we should give Eric a call. As much as he sounds crisp and clean as a bell. I don't think clean as a bell, by the way, is a saying, but he sounds really good when we can hear him. Let's give Eric a call. As much as I love the technology, maybe we can work on Eric's Wi-Fi or something like that. It's the Eric Francis Hour on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Steinberg along with you. Hopefully your Friday is going along well. And you know what? We'll continue working out the bugs as we continue. It's our first one or two times doing this Eric Francis Hour. So, you know, we're working through the bugs. Do we have EF back? Okay, let's welcome Eric back. It doesn't sound quite as good on the phone, but he's back with us. Now, you were just right before you cut out, you were talking about the Tuesday stats page.
Oh yeah, you see that beautiful page of stats, and you always look at the teams like Jacques Lemaire coach teams, whether it was the Devils or Minnesota, and you knew that the leading scorer was only going to have a paltry amount of points compared to, you know, so many of the other teams around the league. Like, it's just the way it's always been, and I don't think that the Calgary Flames play a Jacques Lemaire style defense, but when your mantra revolves always around being on the right side of the puck. And always defense first sort of thing. And don't get me wrong, they're always trying to create, you know, chances off the rush. And you know, they haven't abandoned the offensive game. But the style of game they play is not conducive to being a heavy, heavy scoring team. Like, right. That's fair to say. And
I
that's
agree.
Not making an excuse.
I agree.
Plus the personnel you have. You got a bunch of youngsters who are trying to find their way in the league. You got other guys that are, some of them are cast-offs. Whatever you want to, however you want to describe them, it's a group that I don't think many would have thought they would be in the top half of scoring. So it shouldn't be a big surprise, but that number in terms of consistently scoring three or less is actually shocking. Right? No one knew that was actually a stat until it started to become one here.
Yeah, right? That's true. It's true. My, I guess the biggest question for me about this is, like, does this team or can this team remain as competitive as they've been? Can this team remain right smack dab in the middle of the Western Conference playoff picture if the lack of scoring? And I'm not suggesting they need to become one of the highest scoring teams in the league, but if they don't get themselves a little bit higher, if we don't see them be a little bit more consistent offensively, Can team defense and goaltending continue to be the reasons they win consistently, and can they stay right in the middle of this playoff picture? I'm curious as to where you are on that.
Yeah, I think the question this entire season is this sustainable? Like, you know, them sitting in a playoff spot right now is very surprising to everyone, and you know, the question is it sustainable? And I think most people's answer is no, probably not. And it's definitely not sustainable if you don't start figuring out your goal scoring. Listen, I'll make this prediction. By the end of the year, the leading scorer on this team is going to be Matt Coronato. And I think it might not even be close. And that's in terms of goals. That's what I really believe. I really think he's projected to the point where, you know, he's got enough confidence to know that he's an everyday NHL. I think the days of us wondering if he might get sent down again are done. And I said that day that he scored two goals, those two monumental goals in his career, was it in Montreal?
Yeah, Montreal.
The one, you know, including 7 seconds into overtime. Like, just those were goal scorers' goals. And like, at that point in time, there's no looking back. And to me, at that point in time, it was clear, okay, there's a 25-goal scorer for the Calgary Flames, and it might even happen this year. And I don't know what the projections are at this point in time, but I really believe that that's going to happen. So I think he's going to be your highest scorer this year, with around 25, 27 goals. And it's tough to kind of look at this roster and go, I don't see Sharon Govich getting back to him. I don't Mm-hmm. Think anyone ever thought Coleman would get back to 30 goals. You know, you look around and there's just a lot of doubt that a lot of these guys could put up some big numbers. So they're going to have to get by with great goaltending. Luckily, they've been able to do it so far. It's not sustainable.
Yeah. Where it's the Eric Francis Hour, Steinberg and Francis. And I do want to make a little bit of time for the thing that you are adamant we get to at the end of the hour. So that's why I'll move to our second topic of the first half. And that is, where are we on the overtime winner on Thursday against St. Louis? It was obviously a big topic after the game. There was a significant review after Colton Parayko wins the game at 2:25 of the extra frame. Then it gets reviewed on the Situation Room initiated review. And after it was like 7.5 minutes or whatever it was until they finally came out with a review, they call it a good goal. What were your thoughts on it? And what was your feel on, you know, I think was... I don't think it's as controversial today as it was on Thursday, but what was your feel on that goal and the NHL and the referees allowing it?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, it wasn't worth losing a minute of sleep over. Yeah, sure, if you're the Flame player, you felt like maybe you got jobbed. But if you really ever feel completely jobbed by the Situation Room, then you haven't really been paying attention, right? I mean, you know that pretty much every single time.
Yeah.
It could go the other way. I was a little surprised. I thought it's pretty clear that he stabbed the pad. I don't think he meant it. And Parayko is like a gentle, wonderful soul. This guy is a really good dude. Like, people should be happy. He made Team Canada. I know that it's probably cost Mackenzie Weegar a spot or one of those spots. But, you know, he I thought he was genuine after the game. And he said, like, I hope I got the puck. Like, I don't even know. But he definitely got the pad. Listen, I didn't see a over-the-top reaction from Dan Vladar when the goal was scored. Like, he just got up and started skating to the bench. It was only after the review that he felt like he got really jobbed and was steamed and lost his mind when he was leaving the ice. And so I think initially he thought it was a good goal, like probably a lot of people did. But then you slow it down, and I do really think that he jabs the pad in. And I agree with Ryan Huska when he says if he doesn't jab the pad in, then Vladar's leg stays there and the puck probably doesn't go in the net. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not going to lose my mind over it. And it was when the league put out their explanation that I was like, yeah, I 100% agree with the ruling based on the verbiage. And in the verbiage, it states that if there's incidental contact and two players are battling for a puck and there's incidental contact on the goalie, the goal shall stand. I don't remember ever reading that one before. Like, we've seen incidental contact at the top of the crease. That's just the bare minimum, and they've called goals back. So, again, consistency is always going to be the bugaboo when people talk about the Situation Room. And I know everyone just says, oh, these guys, these idiots always get it wrong, or they get it wrong so often. Every situation is so radically different than the one they saw 20 minutes earlier. It's an inexact science, and it never will be an exact science unless we get some sort of AI program. And I shouldn't say that because who knows what's coming around the corner. But, you know, these are humans, and
I'm excited for the AI Eric Francis Hour. Just me and you. Just me and you, AI. I think that'd be really good.
There'd be so much more intelligence. Oh my
gosh. We don't stand a chance.
Yeah, it would be great. Actually, I'd tune into that one. That's for sure. Yeah, so I don't know about you. I thought it should have been disallowed. I thought he didn't have a way to anchor his leg, and the only way that it got thrust into the net was because of the stick that was coming at a high rate of speed. I want to hear your thoughts on it, but I also just want to point out, like, boy, did Sharon Govich get walked on that play. Like, that was embarrassing. I know he's not a defenseman, but he had to have seen what, you know, Rob Thomas had done earlier in the game with a stutter step that blew by a defenseman and led to a goal. Come on, like, that was bad. And then when you get beat that bad and you're embarrassed, then at least take the man who's charging the net for the rebound. So pretty embarrassing for Sharon Govich. Not sure I'd have him on in overtime very often moving forward.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty soft night for Sharon Govich. Soft on that play, probably a little soft. Not soft, maybe the wrong word, but not where he needed to be.
No, I think soft is a great word. I think soft is a great word when you're talking about Sharon Govich. Go ahead.
And the penalty kill, the 1-0 goal too. He was not where he needed to be, and kind of it's been a rough year for 17. Now it was a rough start to last year too, and he figured out and scored his 30+.
Yeah.
But and you know, going back to where we were at the beginning of the segment, he's one of those guys. Huberto, Kadri, Zeri, Kuzmenko. Sharon Govich, that's a guy that has not been where he was last year. That's a guy that you were counting on, especially with a brand new contract extension. That's a guy you were counting on to be a big time contributor. Hasn't gotten to where a lot of Flames fans and the team itself was hoping it would be. So I think that, yeah, it was a pretty soft play on the overtime winner for sure.
Yeah, and the goal, you thought it should count, shouldn't count?
Oh, yes.
I don't really want to spend too much time on it, but I'm curious.
I thought it shouldn't have counted. Again, the verbiage, my problem is that, and I think where the Flames were is that how many times would that goal not have counted? They feel like they've disallowed similar goals in the past for a whole lot less. Why does this one count? And they made it seem like it was so cut and dried, but there was a 7.5-minute review. I think that what Ryan Huska's point is kind of where I'm at. If he doesn't jam the pad, does the puck go in? I don't think so. I get it that you're fighting for a loose puck, but it wasn't a loose puck battle. One guy's leg was anchored and the other guy was fighting for a loose puck. And that was also part of the verbiage. That's the part that I disagree with. They're like, if there is a puck battle going on where two players are going for it simultaneously and there's incidental contact, I didn't feel like that met the criteria. It's gray area though. And that's maybe the most frustrating part for a lot of fans is that there is so much gray area. And as such, the decision varies so, it's so different time to time, and what they decide one night feels like it's drastically different from the other night. I digress. I didn't lose a lot of sleep over it. They still didn't score their fourth goal in regulation. They put themselves in a situation where a borderline goal could count and lose them the game. Did I lose a lot of sleep over it? No, because again, it was what I think we can all agree on is that it was, whether we thought it should count or shouldn't count, is that it was very much shrouded in gray area.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to say this too, because I think, look, Ryan Huska, who's pretty even keel, you could tell he was hot after the game. And, you know, Dan Vladar was too. They clearly told him to take an extra shower before he came out and talked to us and said all the right things. But I think he had probably some stronger opinions.
Very diplomatic, I thought.
Oh, yeah. No, they clearly talked to him and said, look, okay, look, Vladdy, calm down. Go take a shower. The media will wait for you. He was fully dressed. You know what I mean? Like most guys come out with it before their shower. For Vladdy, they wanted him to make sure he was cooling off a little bit.
Yeah.
Good on him. He wasn't going there. We tried different ways to get him. Yes, you did. But he wasn't going there. That's fine. But you know, the coach was mad because that the NHL officials didn't come and explain after the ruling was made by Toronto why it was a goal. And I get it. He was hot and he's frustrated, but what's the point of an NHL referee coming over? It's done. The game's over. Everyone's going home. The cars are already starting to stream out of the parking lot. Why are they going to come over there and sit there and then be subjected to you yelling at them or players telling you them how bad the decision was? And it's not even their decision. It's Toronto who made the decision. And he was all mad because the refs just skated off without, and he didn't use the word accountability, but that's a word that I think some people start to use and say, oh, there's no accountability for refs. You know, there's accountability for coaches and players and general managers, but there's no accountability for the refs. And I'll never buy that argument. I've had so many conversations over the years with Stephen Walkham, who's run that thing forever. And those guys are adjudicated after every single game, after every single controversial goal.
Yes, they're not publicly flogged, but there is accountability behind closed doors.
That's all I'm saying. Like, nobody defends the refs, and it's not exactly my job in life, or my goal. But there is accountability, and these guys do get it right like 95% of the time. So I thought I'd throw that in there for the odd ref out there who may be listening.
Okay, before we pause, you have been talking about this every time I see you. You're like, don't let me forget to tell you this story. Like, every time I see you, it's like, oh, by the way, don't let me forget. Okay, you've got a very funny story that you wanted to share, and you've been hyping this up for the last week. I'm very excited for this.
No, see, now you've set me up to fail, and it's not a funny story. It's okay. Just this. I've been meaning to tell you that. Do you remember 2 weeks ago? I was driving out to Hanna, Alberta for my son's hockey tournament. Yeah. And I really pressured you. It wasn't fair. I said, look, I'm running the Chuck-a-Puck. Can I count on you for $20 donation to the Chuck-a-Puck? And then we'll chuck the pucks and whoever's closest to center gets half the pot.
Uh-huh.
I owe you $200.
Really? You got it. You got it closest.
My son and my wife threw your pucks for you. The funny thing, your dentist's son is on my team, and I said, "Well, you're his dentist. You throw him for him." And he goes, "No, that's too much pressure. I'm not doing that." And so I handed him to my wife and my son, who were throwing them with all the, we sold 400 bucks or whatever it was. And it was just chaos. And at the end, they're like, it's number 25. Well, I have to look on my sheet. And there it is. I took a photo of the puck and the sheet. And you won half the pot, which is 200 bucks. So when I said to you the other day, look, you owe me 20 bucks for the Chuck-a-Puck, because you never pay it ahead of time. So I didn't want you to lose out on it by a technicality. But you're like, oh, absolutely. You started to reach into your pocket. I said, no, don't worry about it. You can get me later. And that's why I just wanted to tell you that. You want to talk about now the down. So first of all, thank you for helping contribute to our fundraising. Good work, and now unfortunately you did partake in the next two, and you lost. So I owe you $160. There's the downside.
Okay.
I put you down for 20 more for the next two, but yeah, you're $160 up, my man.
Happy Friday. By the way, shout out Maury here at Dental in the Suncor building. Even though he did too much pressure, you could have lied about it easily. Nobody would have known. That's the best,
no,
the best dentist
known,
in the city.
You know what? Yeah, he's the man. So there you go. And you got a couple hired guns. Next time we do a Chuck-a-Puck, I'm counting you in, buddy.
I'm just going to be in for Chuck-a-Pucks for the next year, aren't I?
Okay, we got an audio recording of that, right? We got another tournament coming up in January.
That's awesome. That actually exceeded all expectations. Not because of like the result, just because it was so surprising. I had no idea that's what was coming. So you did not overhype it. That was quite surprising, and that's quite funny.
I thought, since I pressured you on the air to buy the ticket, I should also reveal on the air that you actually won. So it's like everybody said, you got to have a ticket to win. And the more things you support in our community, the better chances you're going to win something. So good on you. You support lots of things, and it paid off.
That's funny. He's Eric Francis on Twitter, at Eric Francis. Catch him on sportsnet.ca and, of course, Sportsnet Television. And once a week here on the Eric Francis Hour. The Eric Francis Hour is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has a $312 million positive economic impact in Alberta annually. Visit thehorses.com, 18+. Please play responsibly.
Flamestock is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Eric Francis Hour rolls on this Friday. Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet.ca. I just saw Eric texted me during the pause. There we are.
32.
The pictures prove it. That's so good. That's actually quite an unbelievable story. Hey, it's been a heavy last week. In fact, it's been 8 days now. Here we are on Friday of this week. It was Friday of last week when the Flames played in Columbus. It was the day before U.S. Thanksgiving when the Flames got to Columbus. And since Thursday of last week through to now, it's been a heavy week, watching Rye sit down with Meredith in Meredith Gaudreau, of course, in Columbus, and then going from there. And then obviously Monday and Tuesday with Sean Monahan and his news conference with us on Monday. And then obviously what was just a, Francis, you said last week, Tuesday night at the Dome might be one of the most unforgettable nights that people who are there or people who are watching on TV have ever been a part of. And having been there in person, I can straight up tell you that nothing you said was an exaggeration. That visual, and I'm so glad I got a picture of it, but that visual of Sean and Michael taking the ceremonial face-off with the two teams at center ice, with the Gaudreau family at center ice, and all the phone flashlights lit up. We were both up in the press. Well, you were at concourse level for it. I was up in the press box for it. I'll never forget being in the bowl and in the building as that was going on. It really was. And then throughout the night, Johnny being named number one star at the end of the game, just everything that went into Tuesday night, boy, did it hit all the right notes. And it was perfect. It really, Flames fans, Blue Jackets players, Flames players, behind the scenes staff. It really was a perfect night on Tuesday, wasn't it?
Yeah, and kudos to everyone involved. Like I think that the term I've used a lot since is, I think at the end of the day, we did the Gaudreau family proud.
Yeah.
And I really don't think that there's anything that was more important. I mean, since this whole thing revolved around the Gaudreaus coming here and us trying to do our part as Calgarians to make them feel loved and supported, and the organization did a great job. Have you ever seen two guys face off with tears in their eyes?
Oh,
you know, that's never, I don't ever remember that happening. It is powerful. It was just a powerful night. And, you know, great for everyone involved, like, well done, you know. And two things I want to just say about that. You know, I think that the overwhelming feedback I was getting the day after was, oh my God, how bad people felt for Sean Monahan. And yeah, he's been in the eye of this storm with the family since August 29th. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt that we've all been thinking of Sean Monahan for so long. And he was so beloved here and left under terrible circumstances. And now these are terrible circumstances. But I told this on the broadcast last night, and I just want to reiterate it here because I think it's just more nourishment for the soul. Ryan Leslie and I were doing our TV wrap up at the end of the game after that first round, the first first star selection and all that beautiful stuff. We'd done the interviews and Sean Monahan was up with the family just visiting in the crowd. As you see the players after the games, they get about 5 minutes to go visit before they got to jump on a bus. So, and he came back down the stairs as we were just wrapping up our TV hit. And I just want to share with people, like, he had the biggest smile on his face. I think people probably assume that he left that night just crying all night long. And I'm not saying there aren't moments he broke down, you know, afterwards. He told me in Columbus that he still breaks down every day, every single day. And that might not stop for a while. Mm-hmm. But he left here, like, we did him proud too. And I think that I just wanted to share that he had a massive smile. We both gave him a hug. So happy to see this guy. So happy that he's doing well on the ice. So happy that he's coping with this off the ice, you know, as well as can be expected. And that he left with a massive grin on his face because I think it helped his soul too. So that's important for me to tell, I really believe. And the other thing I just wanted to say was, you know, I had a chat with Guy Gaudreau when they unveiled that bench the other day. And God, he's a beauty. He just wants to talk hockey. That's his therapy, as I kept saying. And, you know, and he had said to me, I asked him if he watches the Flames games, like how mm-hmm. intently. He said he watches every single Flames game, every single Columbus game. He hasn't missed a single game this year. And while he's watching, he pictures Johnny out there and what he'd be doing and where he'd be positioned. He said, there are nights when it just gets a little overwhelming and I have to shut it off because I just kind of go down a bad spot and I get a little too sad. But I think it's important that he's still watching all the games and he's still a big fan and he still has that connection with the city. And when he finished his interview with Jane on the concourse, and a lot of people have seen it since, and Ryan Leslie did a phenomenal job with it. The ovation, like when we talk about these guys being rock stars, like people were screaming like the Beatles, "We love you, we love you." And they were chanting and cheering. It was amazing. So again, good on everybody and the way they support these guys, whether it was up close or from afar.
Yeah, it was pretty perfect the entire way through, and I really do think all the right notes were hit from the very beginning. So it was exactly the celebration that they deserved, and I'm glad they got that. I really, really am. Well, here's another happy thing. Because we talked, it was a little more negative in the first segment. It was pretty cool to see Jacob Pelche score. Hey, I think the fans in the building and fans watching on TV and listening on radio were all happy when Jacob Pelche scored his first of the season. But I don't think I think Jacob Pelche was the happiest player on planet Earth to score that goal, and that celebration, that sure was something. Francis, you were going to write about Jacob before the overtime goal became kind of the story of Thursday's game. He knows the gravity of that goal. He knows what the score is right now, and he knows how big that was to score on Thursday night against the Blues, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Wes or somebody asked, you know, what did that goal mean to you? And he just, his answer, you heard it, was it meant everything. Like, his whole life has been kind of on pause. I'm not that sure if that's the way to put it, but, like, you know, he came into this season probably pretty optimistic, knowing it'd be tough to make the lineup, but probably pretty confident that he could do it. Suddenly he's on waivers and he's in the minors for an extended period of time. You know, this guy, I've heard you say, like, this might be his last chance. I wouldn't go that far, but I would say that we all can wonder aloud, how many more chances is he going to get to prove he's an NHLer? And I still don't think he's proven it. I mean, it's going to take time, but he took a giant step last night, and he only played 7 minutes plus. But that is actually a real feather in his cap that he only played 7 minutes plus, and I seem to notice him a lot more. Like, I thought I was going to look down and say he played 15 minutes. I swear. And when I saw seven, I was like, wow. Did he ever make a lot of those 7 minutes? Like, he had a career high 4 shots. I think he had a couple missed shots. He had a couple giveaways too, and one was egregious. But you know what? He provided energy, and nobody, that smile is so damn infectious when he has scored that goal, and he's just grinning from ear to ear, and he's fist pumping and smashing into the glass, and the boys are hugging him like he just got married. Like, it does mean that much to him, because if he doesn't show something in the next, in this audition, it could be his last chance. So that's a lot of pressure. And he's felt a lot of pressure in the past, and he's talked about that, and it's affected him on and off the ice. But it's nice to see it going his way. If for that, I don't know how many nights that's going to happen. Consistency's always been a question for him. Mm-hmm. But boy, that was a cool moment last night. And it was a huge part of why the Flames came back in that game. I think he scored that 15 seconds after
15 seconds
went up 2-0. Yeah, and then the very next shift, we were showing it on the broadcast. The very next shift after he scores. Massive hit in the neutral zone by, I think it was Weegar. The Flames go down, and I don't remember who, but Sharon Govich or somebody, or Zary had a great scoring chance like 10 seconds after that. So it did energize the bench. It did get the building going. Mm-hmm. It did give the team hope, and it's a reason why they got a point last night. Like, Jacob Pelche played a significant role in them getting 1 point last night. And that fourth line, which all season long has been really, really entertaining and quite effective, no matter who the parts are on it, you know, whether it's Kirkland, whether it's Pelche, they've been effective. And that's pretty awesome to see for him.
Yep, for sure. And again, like, it is so hard not to root for him. And as much as the Flames are still uncertain as to exactly what they have in Pelche, they, they don't want this to be they want this to work. I can tell you with certainty. Like, they drafted this guy for a reason. They had high hopes for him coming into last season for a reason before everything got derailed with the injury. And that's kind of where we are now, is that, you know, this has been a situation where things have been derailed mainly because of what happened last season. And I think that clearly had an impact on the beginning of training camp and throughout training camp. But the Flames want this guy to work. They want this guy to turn into a full-time NHLer. And so now it's on Jacob to continue doing what he's doing, because I'm with you. I think he was very effective in a limited role against the Blues, and if we see more of that, well, then his role isn't going to be so limited, and we're going to start seeing him a whole lot more, and then maybe we can stop having the conversation that we're having right now about how many more times does he have before the Flames decide that maybe they don't have a full-time NHLer. Well, if he keeps doing what he did on Thursday night, then, you know, we're not going to be having that conversation much at all. So I think it was definitely an encouraging step forward for Jacob.
Do you put Kuzmenko in Sunday in Dallas? How can you? I want your answer.
I wouldn't. I don't know what they're going to do, but I wouldn't. I would keep
no.
Because I think Dewar's been pretty effective too. You know, and low-key, Walker Dewar's trying to reclaim his NHL career that we thought he had all. Like, remember, 2 years ago, we thought Walker Dewar had arrived.
Oh, my
like,
God.
This guy is their fourth-line right-winger going forward. They kind of had, like, their new Garnet Hathaway type thing. Like, we thought that it was clear, cut, and dried. And then he played himself out of that last season. So, you know, he's trying to reclaim things a little bit too here.
100%. He just doesn't have the big name because he wasn't a first-round pick.
Exactly.
He was a find in the minor, you know, when he was playing college. And the only reason they found him was because they were scouting Connor Mackey, and he happened to be his teammate. There's a great story by Billy Powers, one of the Flames scouts who found him. And it sure looked like that was going to be one of the bigger finds for the organization until last year, and then it just went sideways for him. So, yeah, no, both of them, deserve a shot to play again in Dallas. I don't know how you bump someone out of the lineup last night. Like, the Flames played quite well last night.
I agree.
And I don't know who you would consider bumping out. If you're bumping someone out of the lineup, it's because they're nicked up and you want to get them some rest and, you know, you don't want Kuzmenko to be sitting on the bench for too long. I get that. I definitely wouldn't even want that either. But I think another game or two, you know, if no one's played their way off the roster, then I can't see you forcing Kuzmenko in, because he's done very little to prove that he deserves another chance right away. So,
our last talking point, we'll just and end it on a positive note. On the Rasmus Anderson front, he's the only Flames player so far to be named to a Four Nations Faceoff roster. He got named to Sweden's roster on Wednesday. It was the one lock. You know, I still think there's a chance that Mackenzie Weegar and Michael Backlund end up there, but as of right now, they weren't on the initial rosters. You know, just continues to underline how big a step Rasmus has taken this year. It continues to underline how much of a core player he is with this team. It's funny, I did a Flames mailbag over at Sportsnet.ca on Friday, and that was the question that I got the most. It's the question that we led with, like, is Rasmus Anderson a trade target, or is Rasmus Anderson a guy that they re-sign? And I know where I stand on it in terms of what is best for the Flames. We don't know where Rasmus is on it, but boy, this guy has arguably been their MVP this season, and good portion of that is the reason why he's going to the Four Nations Faceoff representing Sweden for the first time in more than a decade.
Yeah. And have you told people the story about the t-shirt?
No, I have not. What a story. The t-shirt that Michael Backlund was sporting on Tuesday night.
Yeah. It came out for the press availability. Backlund did, wearing a shirt, and it says, "I got stared down by Rasmus." And it's a great photo of with that death stare of him in his helmet where the death stare. And I thought, boy, that is going to sell. They'll have those in the up in the stores, no question about it. The story is this: you can only earn that T-shirt, and I put it up on Twitter if people want to see what it looks like. You can only earn that if you get stared down by Rasmus Anderson. A member of the Dome staff will somehow find a way to get you that T-shirt. And when we told Ryan Huska that, I showed him the photo of the T-shirt because he hadn't seen it. He said, "I get stared down by Rasmus every day. Like, I should get one of those." I thought that was great. It's the swagger. It's the swagger that I think makes him effective. I think it's the swagger that's helped get him a spot on Team Sweden. It's the swagger that helps him be able to stare down everybody when he scores a goal and get away with it. I think it's just great. Like, he's a character. There's no question the Calgary Flames would love to assign him to a 7 or 8 year extension. Of course they would. As you put it earlier, we don't know what he's thinking. And I think that I'm not even sure he knows what he's thinking right now. He's an emotional guy. I've said from the start of this season that he would, you know, it'll depend on how the Flames season is going to help determine where his head's at in terms of signing next year, whether he will or won't. And if things go well here, there is a chance he could sign here and stay here because, and I think it all stems from that conversation that Ryan Huska had with him in the offseason where he basically called him and said, look, with all those guys who left, and I know some of them are your closest friends, like we need you to step up and play an even more prominent role with our team and be like one of our biggest leaders. And I think that can really help a guy pump his chest out and really take on that responsibility. And he's done exactly that. So he knows he's integral to this organization moving forward. He knows he's going to get paid a whole lot of money. His question is, does he want to do it in Calgary? And if he does, he'll be one of the biggest names and one of the most important players in the franchise moving forward. And I think that means a lot to him. So there is a chance.
Yep, I'm with you. And I know that, you know, the whole idea, like the headline on the mailbag is, would you trade him or would you re-sign him? And I certainly am not trying to push that guy out the door. If I'm the Flames, I'm doing everything I can to keep him in the fold. I think he is a core piece. I think he's a guy you would want to extend. I think especially he's a drafted, developed guy, and those are the guys you keep. It's why, you know, it's why I fought so hard for the whole idea of them. I know people were against, and I know it's a little strange talking about this now, knowing what happened in late August, but you know, it's why I was adamant that even though Johnny decided to sign in Columbus, there were people against the Flames giving him that 8-year deal. I was for it the entire way because when you draft and develop a player, especially in a small Canadian market, and you've got the opportunity to keep them, I think you have to weigh that in. And Rasmus is a guy that they drafted. They've developed him. And if there's a chance to keep him, I think the Flame, that's the type of guy that you keep. And I'm even more adamant about that, knowing the guys that have left this city over the last number of years and have not opted to stay here. I think that would be a massive, massive coup for the Flames if they could keep Rasmus in the fold. So to me, that's one of the biggest priorities going forward is convincing him and seeing if you can get him to sign a long-term extension with the team.
Yeah, and I don't see that announcement coming on July 1st this summer. That's the first chance they'll be able to do that if they want. Even if they've had some early talks at all, we're at a point in hockey where I just don't see he's already made money. So he's already set for life.
Yeah.
If it's your first contract, that's one thing. But if you're already set for life, now it's about just hitting the biggest home run you can. But more importantly, being in the place you want to be in the most. I just don't understand why you would rush that. If you're Rasmus Anderson, I hate to say that because Craig Conroy doesn't want to think that way, but you know, Rasmus will want to see how next year is going to start to unfold and see what the team is looking like, what the future looks like before he signs a 7 or 8 year extension to stay in a city. He wants to see where they're, you know, what direction it's going in.
Good stuff, franchise. Get out of here, pal. We will talk to you next week, hey?
Have a great weekend, my man, and don't spend that $200 too quickly. I'll get it to you. I'm going to see you later tonight, so I will give it to you then.
Good stuff, buddy. Great stuff from Eric Francis. Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. That's the Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry cares for their horses, employs Albertans, and contributes to the economy. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus, please play responsibly.